Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome you all to today's edition of All Sides Weekend, where we talk about today arts and culture in Central Ohio with three very lofty guests who go with that very lofty introduction, beginning with Chris Stoltz, who is the Associate Curator of Film and Video at the Wexner Center for the Arts, opening tonight a new exhibition that Chris will tell us about, Barbara Hammer in This Body. A. Scott Parry is here. Scott is the director of opera and lyric theater at the School of Music at The Ohio State University, the building of which closes tomorrow for 2.5 years. We'll talk about that. Scott is back in town to direct the opera Rigoletto for Opera Project Columbus that opens a week from tonight. And an alumnus of WOSU and a favorite person around here, Andy Falter, is with us. Andy is education director at Actors Theatre of Columbus. He teaches in Worthington at Worthington Kilbourne High School.
Kilbourne Middle School.
He is correcting me already. he is an actor, director, and I am delighted that you are all here today. And I want to start with Andy Falter because your family... And you are in the midst of Romeo and Juliet, almost literally, at Actors Theatre Columbus, which is in Schiller Park. And you, what is, was this 30 years now?
38 years.
38 years in Schiller Park in the summer. What's going on?
38 years. We are celebrating our 38th season. Romeo and Juliet opened up last weekend to great reviews. It's last night, tonight, every single weekend, Thursday through Sunday, 8 p.m., between Memorial Day and Labor Day, Actors Theater puts on classical theater out in the park for everyone. It's not limited where you need a ticket. You come in, bring a chair, bring a blanket, or just bring a snack, have a seat, and enjoy some, well, free classical theater out in the park.
How long have you been involved?
I've been involved 7 years.
How did you get involved?
My friend Philip Hickman wrote a show, and I wanted to audition for that show. It was Robin Hood. And I'd be stupid if I didn't try out for this role, and I didn't get anything. But I got Merchant of Venice. May 13th, 2012, we have a read-through. And there's the person who I ended up marrying, Elizabeth. She played Jessica. I played Lancelot. And 5 years to the day of that moment, we ended up getting married.
It's only going to happen in the theater. That's a wonderful story. Who comes? It's in Schiller Park. I've been there many times. You can actually park easily in the neighborhood.
Yes.
You can bring a picnic. It is free. I hope you're passing a hat or something. But
well, free theater isn't free. We need to be subsidized some way, and we hope that's you. So
yes.
For that, including you, Chris.
Indeed, yes, and I understand that. I will tell you that no matter where you are in the park, if you're by the stage, you can see and hear. You can, because that's not always true, but you certainly can at Actors Theatre. You have a wonderful mix of what you call classic theater and maybe new takes on older pieces. I know Little Women is coming. How is that adapted for the stage? Alcott's Little Women.
Little Women is directed by Beth Josephson, a wonderful colleague of ours who was cast in Robin Hood years ago. She has picked a wonderful script, and it's a great adaptation. The cast is currently off book. I learned that the other day, and they are already ready to perform. They open up June 20th, and they will run for 4 weekends. We basically run from Memorial Day to Labor Day. Each show has 4 weeks. Dangerous Liaisons, the one I'm involved with at the end, will be August 15th through September 1st. So we will wrap up basically bookending our summer with Memorial Day, Labor Day, and a lot of fun classical theater. And in between those two shows, we have As You Like It, another Shakespeare show. So it's classical theater. It's approachable. It's for the masses. It's not for one certain part of the audience. And it's open, and that's really what we are all about. And being out in the park, we get to play out in the park.
You're doing it as Shakespeare did in his lifetime. He was writing for the masses in an outdoor theater.
Exactly. Yeah,
there you go. Actors Theater. Andy will tell us more about the theater in Columbus, what it is to be a theater professional working in Central Ohio, where I would think that opportunities are abounding more and more. I want to turn for a bit to Chris Stoltz from the Wexner Center for the Arts, Associate Curator of Film and
Video.
Yeah. That being a visual medium. Thank you very much. I'm radio impaired here. There are several projects going on right now that you're involved with at the Wexner Center. First of all, you have a new executive director in Johanna Burton, who comes from New York. She was here on the program a few weeks ago and was terrific. She was absolutely wonderful and very impressive.
Yeah, we're so excited to have her on board and very optimistic about the future.
Barbara Hammer is the exhibition that opens, I believe, tonight or today at the Wexner Center. Tell us about who she was and what is meant by the name of the exhibition, In This Body.
Yeah, we have three exhibitions opening tonight, but the first gallery is devoted to Barbara Hammer, who is probably best known as an experimental filmmaker who really was one of the first artists, at least filmmakers, to be dealing with issues of lesbian sexuality, telling the lives of women throughout history whose stories really hadn't been told widely. And then in her later years, fought with cancer for a decade or so. And so the end of her life, she became very interested in the body as a political site. And so that's this exhibition focuses on her work almost more not as a filmmaker, which people aren't aware of. It culminates in a very powerful film that three channels, fills up a whole room, surrounds you. But there'll be lots of objects, bones that have newspaper articles printed on them, x-rays that have been treated and altered. There's interactive breast cancer displays where there's a simulated breast on a pedestal, and you have to search around to find the lump in it, which will then activate a video. So it's all pretty potent stuff.
There is on YouTube, there are several pieces with Barbara Hammer and about Barbara Hammer, and I was very moved by one that she did probably 6 months before her death. She died.
She died in March of this year.
This year, yeah. Where she talked to the camera very, very candidly about, I am somebody with in the final stages of ovarian cancer, and I've been fighting this for 10 years. And she was talking about her life, and she was talking about her death. And I'm saying this, and we're all talking about this, and we're probably depressing the entire audience, but there was nothing depressing about it. The way she presented herself and the way she presented her truths, I thought was very moving, and I benefited, if that's even the right way to say, after I saw this five-minute clip.
Yeah, that's how the exhibition feels. That's a good way to describe it, because it is, when you describe it factually, it's very heavy and seems gloomy. But after you leave that space, it feels invigorating and reviving in a way, if you can say, about an artist who's dealing with death.
I didn't know her. I had not heard of her until I knew you were coming on the program, and I wanted. And your very, very good and active press office was sending out information about Barbara Hammer and the exhibition. And the more I read about her, the more I wanted to attend. My question for you is, given the nature of this exhibition and her work, who would be coming to this?
Yeah, that's there's been lots of outreach with various medical communities or our education department has a really strong brain trauma, the effect of art upon the brain. So I think there's lots of people coming from that medical angle, but then also anybody interested in women's studies, women's issues, women's lives, or just film and art in general. That room where it is three walls, massive walls surrounding you, where you're awash in images, is so powerful, I think, for anybody who walks in.
When you say images, I think one of the hallmarks of the Wexner Center, and do correct me if I'm wrong, is that images can be any kind of images, from paintings, from flat surfaces on the wall, to video installations, to three-dimensional pieces, etc. Is that?
Yeah, we're a contemporary art center and very interdisciplinary. And so this Barbara Hammer is kind of an embodiment of that, an artist who doesn't really work in one mode, finds wherever the idea kind of takes her. And she's worked on a lot of her videos in our post-production studio. So we have this long history going back to 94.
Absent the work that she did documenting the final years of her illness, which did inform a lot of her work, who was she before that happened to her?
Yeah, she was a life force, an adventurer. She started off on a fairly conventional path, was married, and then went motorbiking through South America with her husband at the time, and then decided she had to change her life, discovered what it even meant to be a lesbian, figured out a new life as an artist, really pioneering.
She was doing this, too, before a lot of people had the courage, frankly, to work that way, because she was not young when she died. I think she was 80 when she passed away.
Exactly. Yeah. So she was doing this in the 60s,
right.
Early 60s, before, you know, they were what people think of as the 60s now. Yeah, she's had so many phases in her career. One thing that we always loved when we worked with her was she had a really strong focus on her legacy and becoming a mentor. And so she set up all sorts of scholarships and grants for other artists in her wake, and really working to build an archive. And we're just so happy to be able to do this tribute to her.
I am certainly planning to go and see the exhibition, but I would urge anybody to just go to YouTube and type in Barbara Hammer and look at a couple of the pieces of her speaking about herself and her work. They were very, very compelling, and they did make me, the way she presented herself did make me want to know more.
Yeah, and there was a really lovely article that Masha Gessen wrote for The New Yorker right before she died that is a great introduction and also a great setup for this exhibition.
We are going to be talking more about exhibitions at the Wexner Center, including their very popular, I guess they call them drive-in summer theaters on the plaza, which are a great favorite from everybody, complete with food trucks, and they will start up later in the summer. And we're going to talk more with Andy Falter about Actors Theater. I'm wondering why you're not playing Mercutio, because I look at you and I think he'd be a very good Mercutio, which I think is the best part in that show anyway. That's just me. And you'll be directing Dangerous Liaisons at Actors Theater. And I want to talk more about the work that you do in schools, because I think that's where you change people's lives, when you get to when they're 12 and 13 years old. And Scott Perry is going to talk to us about all things Rigoletto and Giuseppe Verdi. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment with more of All Sides Weekend. Don't go away.
In WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
One thing about living in Central Ohio, there is never a reason to be bored. Summer, winter, fall, whatever. We have three people on today's edition of All Sides Weekend telling us about wonderful events happening now, happening quickly here within Central Ohio. They are Chris Stoltz at the Wexner Center for the Art. He was talking about a brand new exhibition, Barbara Hammer in This Body, that opens tonight. Andy Falter is here from Actors Theater, performing in Schiller Park weekends through Labor Day, doing Romeo and Juliet and Dangerous Liaisons and As You Like It, was it?
And Little Women
as well. We'll talk more about that. A. Scott Perry is here. Scott is a teacher, a mentor, a director, an arts professional. He spends a lot of time in Central Ohio. He's not here permanently, alas, because he's busy everywhere else. But he is on the faculty of the School of Music at The Ohio State University. What's this I hear about the building being knocked down tomorrow? What's going on with that on campus here?
Well, it's not tomorrow, but there was a vote to move forward on a new building for the School of Music and Department of Theater, sort of creating and finishing the plan for an arts district there at OSU on High and 15th Street. So it'll be a great process for the next 2.5 years of transitioning into and building this new space. So starting tomorrow, fencing goes up, and this summer, shovels start getting put in the ground.
So your colleagues are moving out of Weigel Hall at this moment, probably, or soon.
Some, quickly. Bit by bit. Yes, exactly. Some people are relocating. Some people are staying on one half of the building as it goes under construction.
So Johanna Burton at the Wexner Center has inherited a construction site because,
yeah.
because you're neighbors.
So contemporary art is always in flux.
That's right. Well, I mean, it's too much of a good thing is wonderful. You're just making more room.
Yeah. Right.
And WSU, we will be neighbors because we're going to be moving it across the street to our new building, I believe, in October of 2020, all things going well. So all that by way of saying that you're here to work with Opera Project Columbus and Maestro Alessandro Siciliani. People will remember Alessandro as the longtime, very popular conductor of the Columbus Symphony. In the years since he's left them, he has started a new opera company, among other things, here in Columbus. Opera Project Columbus has been performing around town. Now you're in the Southern Theater downtown. And Scott Perry, you are directing a production that opens a week from tonight with Alessandro Siciliani conducting a Verdi's Rigoletto. Who is Verdi and what is Rigoletto?
Well, Verdi, let's go on. A master of the theater and probably the man most associated with what we consider the operatic repertoire of Italian opera.
Mobile.
There it is.
Okay.
Yeah, great advertisement for the opera next week. Rigoletto actually was an interesting point in his career. It came about midway in his career. It's sort of the idea of ushering in Verdi's what we call his middle period. This is really when he cements his popularity with the Italian public in the middle of the 19th century, 1850s, with this opera, Il Trovatore, and then followed by La Traviata, probably three of his most famous operas, really, that are standard now in the Italian repertoire.
Scott, opera's boring. Nobody cares. Okay?
Well, it's I'll tell you what. No.
Scott, it's a bunch of fat people screaming at each other. I don't want to hear it. And there's an idiot called Christopher Purdy who works at WOSU and is on classical, and all the man talks about is this nonsense, and I'm tired of it. So,
well, I'll tell you what, Rigoletto, and especially this production, is not your grandfather's opera. This production is definitely talking about the contemporary events of today. Conceptually speaking, we're setting it in the very near future.
Oh, here we go.
In an Eastern Bloc country.
Here we go.
And so we will be commenting on current political and sociological events. The idea and...
Wait a minute. Rigoletto's a court jester, okay?
That's right.
He walks around with bells in his cap, and his job is to divert to everybody's attention from the decay, the rot, and the misery of this licentious playboy duke and his ridiculous court. Discuss.
Correct. However, there's no bells on hats. There are suits. There's an oligarchy in place, and we see the idea of a singular, unassailable leader, one who is invested in himself, and how that then trickles down to the society that he's leading, both on an individual level and on a sociological level. So really, there's, I think, contemporary ideas about the rise of populism in Eastern Europe, especially now with the European elections that just happened last week. The idea that the strong man is becoming something that is seen as a figure of populism. And what does that mean then? How do we deal with that? How do we deal with that on a personal level, on a societal level? And so that's really what we're addressing here with this production, especially. And I'll tell you, the cast is amazing. These are not, like you say, fat people walking around in costumes screaming their heads off.
Which, by the way, hasn't happened in about three generations.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No. These are really well trained, fantastic young singing actors.
Hot.
Oh, well, yeah, you could say that. I remember we were doing the photo shoot, and the tenor says to me, "Oh yeah, I've done print work before. I've done some modeling," and I sort of thought, yeah, of course you have. I mean,
yeah, can he sing?
Yeah, oh, can he sing?
I don't know.
Oh,
I mean,
boy.
Can he sing?
I'll tell you what, he just
Pavarotti never modeled in his life. The man could sing. So.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I had to say, you know, who's the future Pavarotti, this tenor is definitely on his way up. I would say he's a rising tenor right out of AVA. I think he's going directly from here to Cincinnati to do Romeo with them and then onward and upward.
Okay, hang on a minute. Now we've got Barbara Hammer dying of cancer, God bless him, and we've got the Middle Eastern. I want to be entertained, boys and girls, so let's go. Entertain me.
Well, as you sang, La Donna Mobile, I mean, this is probably the most famous tune in all of opera. And to tell you the truth, that was Verdi's gig. I mean, Verdi was writing pop music at the time. Verdi was writing music that everyone was clamoring for. So, in fact, La Donna Mobile, the most famous, probably...
Women are as fickle as the wind. You Correct. Can't say that today. That's, you know, you really can't say that today. But in Italian, you can sing it, probably.
You can sing it in Italian, right. What you can't speak in English, you can sing in Italian. In this moment, though, he actually did not give the music to the tenor or anyone else until the final dress rehearsal, because he knew if that music got out, it would be all over town immediately. So in order to surprise the public with a great pop tune, he kept it and held it aside until literally the final days before the opening night.
Andy Falter directs plays, and I'm sure he directs musicals. He knows what it is to direct a show. So do you, Scott Perry. You have to deal with an orchestra. You have to deal with a chorus. You have to deal with singers. And God help us all, you have to deal with a conductor. So how does that work? What is your role in making it all happen when the curtain goes up? Not that there'll probably be a curtain, but I'm just saying.
There's a curtain, okay. Absolutely. It's the Southern Theater, for heaven's sakes. We have to have a curtain.
All right.
For me, my job that I see basically foremost is to be the person who helps all people come together to a singular focused idea, that I'm there to try to facilitate each performer to take their own point of view on the role and filter it through a singular concept. I'm there to help the music come alive in a visual fashion, in a dramatic fashion. I'm there to help take the ideas that the maestro has that he wants to explore musically and bring them to a physicalization on the stage, to help these people find these characters and inhabit them in a real and believable way.
Give me an idea of the story, absent the Verdi story, of Rigoletto.
You've got a leader, you've got his courtiers, you've got his sort of entourage, shall we say, one of which is a comedian. That person, however, has a little secret. He has a daughter, a secret daughter that he's hiding away so that none of the other court can
attack her,
molest her, use her as leverage against him. However, the rest of the court finds out about this and does abduct her. And takes her to the leader. The leader and she have a negative relationship, shall we say. And so as revenge, Rigoletto, this jokester,
father,
decides that he's going to kill the leader, kill the duke in this case. Things go a bit awry and the plan is backfired on him. And he has been cursed by a former leader. And this curse is the thing that rattles in his brain that he feels has finally been achieved by the end of the piece.
There is a production of Rigoletto going on in New York, which is not set in the 16th century Italy. It's set in Vegas in the 60s with the Rat Pack. And the Duke
Correct.
Of Mantua is Sinatra. And Rigoletto is Don Rickles, and Marilyn is in it. It's fascinating. It works on many, many different levels. So
I've seen it a couple times.
You say that you're reimagining a bit. Mm-hmm. That's been done before. Mm-hmm. There's been a production of it set in New York in the 50s in Little Italy with the mob.
Jonathan Miller's production.
Yeah, with that, mm-hmm. sure. So, mm-hmm. but you're going to Eastern Europe. You're going to oligarchy. You're getting very political.
Absolutely. I imagine this
as
taking
Verdi
place.
Was.
He was. He wanted it always in his time. And that was what was interesting is that the censors in the time said, you can't address this subject matter. This is based on a Victor Hugo novel.
About a king who was murdered.
Exactly.
Right.
And so the censors said in Italy, you cannot address this subject matter. So in order to get around that, they cut certain things, put it to the 14th century, put it up in Mantua, so that there was no relationship to the day. But everyone understood
that
this was all about the political goings-on of his day. And so I'm taking that opportunity as Verdi's intent, which was to comment on the events of the current environment, and doing exactly that.
Live in very interesting times, and there's no reason not to use those times when you're doing work that was maybe written 150 or so years ago.
To me, opera is always contemporary,
right,
because it's happening in the now. So the
right.
audience comes with our awareness, our world into the theater, and we need to have that conversation with them.
And there are great tunes.
Oh,
there are
boy.
Fantastic tunes.
Yes.
I mean, if you like music, and the thing is, very often you go to this particular show and you see people start realizing they know the tunes. When they're going on. So that's always a nice moment. Alessandro Siciliani is conducting. He has a big following locally still, and deservedly so. He is the authentic go-to person for this repertoire. So this is in the Southern Theater next Friday and next Sunday, a week from this weekend.
Correct.
Verdi's Rigoletto, directed by A. Scott Parry with Opera Project Columbus. While Andy Falter is preparing a new production of Dangerous Liaisons, people know the movie, Glenn Close, Michelle Pfeiffer. There are a couple of different movies of that. It's an old story, and it's a very compelling story.
And completely contemporary in everything that we're going on with politics to men and women relationships, just relationships in general. There's also a Milos Forman film called
right.
Valère.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
There's so many different adaptations, and I'm not just directing it by myself. Philip and I, the aforementioned artistic director now at Actors Theater of Columbus, we are co-directing it. And he approached me last year to see if I was interested in directing. And I always thought, you know, if I ever got a chance to have my own show to direct at Actors Theater, they'd give me a comedy because, you know, as the education director and running the kids and, you know, they'll throw comedy at me. No, he wanted to play with Dangerous Liaisons. And as soon as he pitched it to me.
Which maybe has comic elements, but it is not a comedy.
It is not a comedy, but well, we are going to find enjoyment, and the script is just lovely. And man alive, the ending to the movie is not the ending in the Broadway production.
This is Christopher Hampton?
Yes.
Yes, based on Dulaclo's novel of, I think, the 18th century.
Exactly, and it was ironic him asking me this because French is my Achilles heel when it comes to performing accents. I sound more like a Pepe Le Pew, very cartoony. I can throw it off, but yeah, it's not realistic. Not where I want to be, but it's going to be a very fun challenge, and we start rehearsals at the end of the month, and our summer camps start, 10 days from now. So my summer is really kicking off. It's what I work the whole school year to do.
Give us an idea of the story of Dangerous Liaisons, and then I want to ask you about the summer camps.
It is, it's women in power that use their power interestingly, and men who don't realize that they're smarter than us.
The women are smarter than us. We all, men know
but
that.
We know that now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Philip and I are going to have fun with that.
Okay. Yeah. And there are some wonderfully despicable characters in it too, which is always
they're delicious.
Yeah.
Everybody is written just so beautifully, and I'm really interested in you mentioned off air the opera.
Conrad Sousa's opera, Dangerous Liaisons, from San Francisco about 25 years ago. Yeah. It's terrific. Yeah, I think it's on YouTube. I think you can find it.
Well,
tell me about the summer camps.
It's my favorite time of the year. Just being able to introduce theater to all ages. And that's one of the greatest things about the summer camps we've created at Actors Theater is they're not only for elementary and middle and high school kids. We also have summer camps for adults. They're not during the day. They'd be after work. 6:30 to 9, Monday through Friday. Everybody who takes part in our summer camps has a preview show in front of one of the shows that are going on. So the last week of Romeo and Juliet will be our first summer camp performance, and that'll be an improv performance for all ages. And it's one of my favorite things to kick the summer off with is let's just play.
Where does the camp meet in Schiller Park?
The camp meets at Schiller Park. We have the cottage right there on the City Park Drive, our City Park Avenue. We meet there 9 o'clock in the morning, Monday through Friday. We play out in the park. There are ways we can get away from the weather if we need to. We really have to rethink this outdoor, you know, arts, but it's so much fun. It's hard to pass up, right? I look forward to hearing more about that. Each one of our camps, I don't just want to teach the art. I want to show them what it's like to perform. And being able to perform on that stage at 7:30 on a Friday right before, I mean, people in that audience are there to see an 8 o'clock show. They're eating their cheese, they're drinking their Diet Pepsis, wink, wink, and they are enjoying the evening. And then all of a sudden you have a seventh grader up there performing a monologue or two fifth graders doing an improv scene that the guy in the front row picked the characters. It's so much fun to play out there, and it's just fun. And it gives them all an opportunity to perform in front of a very, very smiley, I'm happy to not have this conversation with the people I went to. I'm going to just watch this performance in their lovely.
When the kids come to you, have they ever done anything like this before? Do you ever get somebody who's never even stood in front of an audience?
I get adults that have never.
Right.
I get adults that haven't done it since high school, who just have a weekend available and they want to finally try it again. Other people who want to get better at public speaking. A parent who's tired of their child playing Fortnite too long, just get them out of the house. The best thing about summer camps, in difference to the school year, every single one of those kids do want to be there.
They want to be there, yeah.
And we just play.
What age kids?
It starts as young as first grade.
Really? Oh, that's fun.
All the way to the School of Life.
Oh, that's terrific. That's fun. And that's
And that's on our webpage, theactorstheatre.org/education, or just click on the education button. All the camps are listed, and they are filling up quickly.
What do you do at Worthington Kilbourne?
At Kilbourne Middle School.
I keep doing that. I'm sorry.
You know what? My mother does the exact same thing. I correct her every time. Anyway.
Your mother and I went to the prom together. Give me a break.
Oh, God. And I turned out amazing.
You did.
At Kilbourne Middle School, I'm a supplemental theater director. I teach the 7th, 8th grade play, and that happens in the late winter, and the 6th grade musical, which happens a month and a half later.
What are some of the shows you've done?
This year, we did The Hobbit with the 7th and 8th graders, and that was just
glorious. That must have been fun.
Glorious.
Yeah.
And for the 6th graders, I found a show called Elephants. Imagine the word elephant. Get rid of the T. A planet Eleph has a whole bunch of elephants, these creatures, but they don't speak English. They just eat a lot of mangoes. But the humans who are there, or the whoever they are who are there, can speak English for them. So they sing there. Hmm. It was just a whole lot of fun.
And I want to be a kid again and come to your club.
You can take the camp, Chris. There's room available for you.
I would love to see that.
I closed the place down. We'll be right back. We're going to take a final break and come back with more of this conversation of All Sides Weekend. Don't be bored and don't go away.
I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown, and we are the hosts of Snollygoster, WOSU's podcast all about politics in Ohio.
Each week, we chat about what the shrewd politicians at the State House are up to and how national politics affects us here at home.
Find out why listeners have called us a weekly must-listen. For a lighthearted yet in-depth look at Ohio politics, subscribe to Snollygoster wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back, and I know no one listening is bored. We're talking about the arts and culture in Central Ohio. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend, and I do thank you for spending this time with us. We have one more segment to talk about Actors Theater of Columbus in Schiller Park, to talk about Verdi's Rigoletto as refashioned by A. Scott Parry, conducted by Alessandro Siciliani. It will be in the Southern Theater next weekend, and it's very unprofessional to say this, but I don't care. The title role is being done by a young man called Robert Kerr, who I first heard sing when he was probably a freshman in college. He broke my heart then. That's about 15 years ago, and he is going to be magnificent in this part. And thank you for making that happen, Scott Parry, with your terrific work.
Absolutely. He's going to really knock it out of the park.
I'll say no more, but you know, I'm telling you, I'm right. I know what I'm talking about. Now, speaking of know what he's talking about, Chris Stoltz from the Wexner Center is here. We've been talking about the exhibition Barbara Hammer in This Body that opens tonight, but there is a lot going on at the Wexner Center. Just run down one of the most popular things the center does, and the smartest move they made, really, for the wide public, is to invite everybody in the summer to go to the movies on the outdoor plaza just at dark, around 9 o'clock at night. You're surrounded by food trucks and ice cream and things like that. That is a marvelous time. You bring a chair, you sit, and you go to the movies. What's up this year with that? When is that happening?
Yeah, it's happening. We do one a month from June through August, and we call it the Wex Drive-In. It's like a drive-in, but without the cars.
Can you neck? I guess, if you
sure.
want to. I
mean, yeah, yeah, there's plenty of dark corners.
Most of us have passed the point, but okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's It's a scenario where you can bring your own blankets, bring your own folding chairs.
Free.
And it's free. There's, yeah, like you said, Jenny's Ice Cream, Seven Sun Brewery, High Poke. This year, our Cafe Heirloom is taking advance orders, so you can have almost like a box meal waiting for you. There's also lots of bells and whistles this year that we've added on to it. For each screening, a regional artist has designed a T-shirt about the film that we'll be showing that night. There'll be DJs and film trivia beforehand for, I guess I can talk about the films. In July, we're showing Jurassic Park. And so the Orton School of Geology at Ohio State is bringing some dinosaur samples and relics. And for The Craft, which we're showing on August 20th, a cult film from 1996 about high school teen witches. There'll be tarot card readings for that. So there'll be all sorts of activities around the films.
And Logan's Run, I think, is
we kick things off, yeah, June 18th with Logan's Run. We're about to have our 30th anniversary at the Wexner Center in November. So it seemed kind of cheeky to show a film where everybody over 30 has to die.
I would have been dead 30 plus years ago had that been true. Yes, okay. So that's the summer drive-in, Logan's Run, Jurassic Park, and The Craft.
Correct.
And there'll be a lot of things going on, a lot of ancillary events for each showing. They are free.
They're free.
All you do is bring a chair.
And there's drive-ins all over the city anymore, lots of outdoor screenings. But as far as I know, we're the only place still showing things on 35-millimeter film.
They're marvelous. Yeah. They're terrific.
So we pull up a big box truck with a huge projector in the back of it and still show like old-school film projection drive-in style.
Yes, so we look forward to that. What else besides Barbara Hammer is going on right now in terms of exhibitions over there?
In exhibitions, there's two other shows. There's Cecilia Vicuña, where she works with very small, ordinary objects, almost things you'd find on the street, and makes these beautiful, delicate little sculptures that'll be in our Gallery B, which is very long and narrow. So it'll be filled with these almost ephemeral objects. And then the last two galleries are devoted to an artist who's probably best known as a musician, Jason Moran. He's a jazz musician who's played here a lot.
Great jazz artist, yeah.
Yes, but he's also done lots of collaborations over the years with visual artists, whether it's a video artist that he's made a soundtrack for or a more object-based thing. But then he also has his own career. And some of the interesting tent poles in his show is he's recreated some of the famous jazz stages that he's played in or that have been meaningful to history, the Savoy, or a more like just kind of down-home domestic set. And there's these little sets that at the opening tonight will have musicians playing within the stages to kind of activate the show and make it something that's alive.
If people don't know, I keep wanting to make the point that at the Wexner Center, you do embrace music and you do embrace drama and certainly film, God knows, and video. And really anything that is any entity that's used to communicate something is generally available at the Wexner Center, whether all disciplines are there at once or not. But there really is something for, if you're a musician, there's certainly it should be a destination for you. If you're a film buff, the film series are incredible and they're ongoing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, year round.
Yeah, they're year round. And you have the Barbara Hammer thing. You have a lot of artists in residence. And one of the most compelling in recent years was Mark Lomax, who lives here in Columbus, the great jazz drummer and composer, the Wexner Center presented him at the Lincoln Theater. You couldn't get in. I mean, it was mobbed to the gills. I snuck in, and it was mobbed. It really, you couldn't get it, and it was a great, great evening.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, with all the different departments you have there and all the different curators, and now with a new director, how is this working? How do you all decide what gets shown or presented in that building on High Street?
Yeah, it'll be real exciting, just speaking personally now. In about a week and a half, we're going to have a retreat with all the programmers and Joanna, and that'll be kind of our first occasion to talk institutionally about how what philosophies we want. It's a good moment to rediscuss that. I think for me, one of my favorite things that can happen at the Wexner Center are these interdisciplinary moments. We had a filmmaker that we've worked with over the years, Sam Green, who did a kind of a live film, a live documentary about Kronos Quartet, the yeah, musical group.
I remember that was incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. So those moments where different disciplines can come together in ways, and especially in an age where there's so many other distractions in the world, some of those things where, as I'm sure the other panelists know, you have to be in the room for that moment to experience it. It can't be recaptured in playback or video. It's that energy that the audience brings to it.
You also have to be really in the, that's a cliche, but you do have to be in the moment. And I think for that to really happen, you have to be present rather than sitting at home and watching something. You have to be really there. So I'm curious with Andy and with Scott, because you are both working with live theater, live presentations, where you're gearing your work toward an audience that's sitting 10 feet, 15 feet from where your performers are. Do you ever get people coming into your things that have people have, they've never been there before. They have no preconception. Can you tell that? And what do you do with those people?
Well, a few years ago when Pokemon Go came out, we did not know it was released, nor did we know that our stage in the middle of Schiller Park was classified, and I think I'm saying this correctly, as a gym. And we had to contact Nintendo to move the gym because in the middle of a performance of The Countess of Monte Cristo, people are walking up with their phones near, if not on the stage, trying to capture something. And I don't mind that you're in the park, but look around.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I make fun because I don't play it, but I also love the fact that it's getting people to walk around and then say, hey, what are they doing on that stage? And then they find out, oh, it's tonight at 8 o'clock. Let's just sit down and watch it. And we get so many more people in the park right now because of, you know, crowdsourcing, that kind of electronic device. So that's just one example. But civics, look up. If there's a performance, just watch it.
Agreed, yeah.
How does a nice, normal guy like you, Scott Perry, get making his living in opera, for God? Get a real job. Come on, seriously.
Well, that was a rabbit hole, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Tell me, yeah.
Started as a musician, vocalist, and then wanted to conduct, and then brought into the stage management and technical theater, and then finally a mentor said, well, you do all these things put together, why not be a director? And I thought, I've never even considered being a director. So going to school for that and getting a master's at Indiana, obviously Indiana University is a very opera-centric school, so that became what I did for the last 20 years of my life and hopefully for the remainder. You know, opera, it's interesting, as you were talking about sort of getting people in the room who don't know it. I mean, opera has kind of that barrier where people feel like, I don't know this. This is maybe something foreign for me.
Right.
And it's maybe too hoity-toity. The thing for me about opera is it's just storytelling. This is storytelling. And it uses music as a device to open our hearts up as well as our brains with the words. And some people say, well, I don't know what they're singing about. Well, we have, you know, simultaneous translation on the stage. So it's just like watching a foreign film at home, but you're watching it with a group of people and you're discussing stories that are about humanity. You're seeing characters have an experience. You're feeling a sense of catharsis, as everyone does in the theater. And you have a group of people that are there with you experiencing that in the moment. And it's never going to happen again. It's ephemeral. It goes away.
Yeah.
And so then it's great because you get to turn to your neighbor and go, wow, what did you think of that? And you start to engender discussion.
And remember, in terms of Rigoletto, the piece you're working on now, it's about a father wanting to protect his daughter, and he can't.
Exactly.
You know, and so that's a lot of fathers will understand that. They grow up, and they leave home. They shouldn't, but they do. You know, I mean, I have a daughter that age, and I'd be happy if she never left the house again, but that's not the way the world is. So, yeah.
Exactly. We can relate to these characters. These characters are flesh and blood. They're contemporary. They have feelings as we do, and we can connect to those experiences, because opera really at its core is about elevating and exposing the human experience and utilizing music as the vehicle to really crack open that egg, crack open the feeling that you have with it. You know, you watch a movie sometimes, and if the film has no soundtrack, sometimes it becomes one thing, but suddenly a soundtrack gets added to the film and the experience becomes a very different one, and one that is more, maybe has a deeper resonance. And so that's what we're doing in opera.
Where did the idea come from, the fiction come from, that it was only for rich people?
Well, I think because initially it was funded through, I mean, opera is a very expensive endeavor. You have a full orchestra, you have sets, you have costumes, all the things that you would have in a normal theatrical world. But then you also have people who have spent many, many, many years perfecting a craft that is, you know, not everyone sings like an opera singer. This is an athletic event,
right? Yeah.
That these people are doing. They train forever for this. So,
and your career is limited because it is a physical event, right?
Extremely. You have a very short time frame. So bringing all these people, all these craftsmen, all these very greatly trained people together in one place takes a lot of money. And so early on, especially, it was funded through the courts, through kings, queens, the royalty. And so the idea that opera sort of began in that form, I think, has sort of continued. Also, opera is an international event. And so oftentimes, as you say, that language barrier can be a little bit off-putting, where people feel, well, I know my language, but I don't know Italian or I don't know German, so what will I know? So it was great, you know, Beverly Sills at New York City Opera in the 80s turning to this idea of simultaneous English translation, I think really, again, cracked that egg open a little
bit.
She did that.
Yeah, may she rest in peace.
You know, my time at City Opera, I really appreciate that, because that's really where that came to pass, where there was a true connection between the stage and the audience simultaneously in the moment. And I think it really opened up the idea of opera is for everybody.
It was the first time I heard people laughing in an opera house because of the translation.
They knew what they were saying.
Right,
they knew the joke.
Opera. I mean, it was the first time people realized it was funny.
Right.
And that was a wonderful thing to hear. And I remember very well when I would, you know, probably 1982, I sat during the Barber of Seville, which doesn't always play funny, although it is. All of a sudden, it was funny.
Right.
You know, people got it. Yeah.
Right. And Rigoletto is also funny. There's humor here as well, but definitely couched in great tragedy.
Not a laugh at, but, this is in the Southern. This is in the Southern Theater.
Yes.
Which is the first. Tell me, Opera Project Columbus is different than Opera Columbus. They're
correct.
Both apples and oranges. They're both wonderful.
Correct.
They're both wonderful, but this is a different company, Opera Project Columbus.
Absolutely, and I guess maybe some confusion might happen because we are performing this production in the Southern, so there might
be
confusion.
Which is their home as well.
Absolutely, that's where Opera Columbus generally produces their work. So this is just it's a secondary company in town, and I think that both, as you
not
say,
so I would think
apples and oranges,
yeah,
you know, fruits are great. Why not eat them both?
They're a right. You know, there's too much of a good thing, again, is wonderful. And there are a lot of local people performing in Rigoletto. There are a lot of people who are visiting.
Correct.
As well. There's a full orchestra. There's a full chorus. It's a big show.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys don't use amplification.
No
explain
amplification.
Explain that a little bit, because that's interesting to people, that there is no amplification.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. When I'm talking about training, when you're training the human voice in an operatic or a classical style, you're training the voice to have certain partials or frequencies in it that allows it to cut through over a, let's say, a 60-person orchestra. Mm-hmm. How is it that I can hear that one person singing over that huge amount of sound coming from all these instrumentalists? And it's because of that really rigorous training that we develop the sense of a classical approach or a classical production of the voice, which is about frequencies, which is about partials in how we hear all sound.
Rigoletto is presented by Opera Project Columbus, directed by A. Scott Perry, conducted by Alessandro Siciliani in the Southern Theater next Friday, a week from tonight, and the following Sunday. Go to operaprojectcolumbus.com. Come and get your tickets. I'll see you there. Anybody who loves theater, anybody who wants to be out in a beautiful evening and see something wonderful needs to go and be with Andy Falter and Actors Theater of Columbus in Schiller Park. And your wife, Elizabeth, is she in a show this year?
She's in Dangerous Liaisons. And she earned that right.
You're directing your wife.
I am very interesting. She's my wife, but
She's also an acting professional.
She's also a professional, and so am I.
She'll tell you where to stand if you.
And I will.
That'll be wonderful. Andy, and you're also running the summer camps at Actors Theater for people of all ages.
I am, and they kick off in 10 days, and please go to theactorstheater.org. Theater is spelled R-E. and check out what we're doing this
summer.
And
don't forget the Actors Theater.
The.
Okay,
it's, yeah, I mean, well, we and there's
to,
only one E.
We have to fit on the web. All right. And at the Wexner Center, Chris Stoltz, you have the Barbara Hammer In This Body exhibition opening tonight. Go find Barbara on YouTube, and you'll want to see this exhibition. She really whetted my appetite to know more about her work. And again, it is impossible to be bored in Columbus, and it's certainly impossible to be bored at the Wexner Center, no matter when you walk in the doors there. So I thank you very much for coming.
Thanks for having me. And, we try to provide a smorgasbord of options for people.
And you do indeed, and we'll see you for the summer movies outside.
Great.
And tell Johanna Burton hello, and thank you. Hello, Johanna, and thank you all for being here. Andy Falter, thank you. You are a WOSU alumnus. You are loved and missed here, and it's always wonderful to have you back.
It's a pleasure to see you. Thank you.
And A. Scott Perry, you are also the director of opera and music theater at The Ohio State University in the School of Music, and you are back in town to direct Rigoletto. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right. I hope you all wrote this down. There's a lot to do over the next few weeks in Columbus, so get busy. Have a wonderful time, and thank you all for your company. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 WOSU NPR News.